that's going on tonight. Well, thank you, too, for coming. I apologize for not having any sort of agendas or anything, but I didn't want to kill trees to just say we're going to review some of the past performance metrics that we've looked, that we've shown the commission in the past, and take some input on that. I'll get into that in a little more detail. So what we've provided in terms of handouts is every presentation we've given to the commission since we started. And also, we also gave you guys the presentation that I'm going to give to the commission on November 2nd, next Friday. So we'll talk a little bit about that first.
Oh, that little one, yeah, by itself.
So do you have, does this include just the reviews, or does this include the presentation that was given for the policy?
No, it does not include the presentation that was given during policy development or those finals. All these are just the reviews.
Okay.
So the ones we did in the 2015 review, 16, 17, and then we had a couple additional presentations that we did around the pickle that we did. So
what is this pickle?
And it was it's just a reference.
It was a nest reference.
Oh, okay. It got turned into the pickle.
Okay.
Yeah,
so. Fair enough.
So I think we'll start with what I'm planning on giving to the commission on November 2nd. This is more just an FYI, so you guys aren't surprised by anything that is talked about down there. Definitely don't want to have any surprises. It is pretty general in nature. All I'm doing, basically, in a nutshell, is walking the commission through an overview of the policy itself, and then proposing the process that I'm going to that we're going to utilize for the review and seek their approval on that. We're not going to get into any public. There will be a public comment section, but in terms of comments that have been sent to us about the review or all that stuff, that won't be included in this presentation. That'll come in additional presentations. This is once again just to seek their approval of the process that we're going to utilize. So we'll go through this real quickly. Go ahead, Barb. So we'll walk through the intent and policy development, the objectives, guiding principles, species-specific guidance, and then the last part, I'll show them the table that we have to for the proposed review process. So intent, the reason we put this policy together was to have the Fish and Wildlife Commission give us guidance in the terms of in the form of a policy around management objectives for salmon management in Willapa Bay. That's what it was meant to do. Policy development took place over a year. You guys were included. You were part of the ad hoc group, so we put a group together in order to... Yep.
I don't know how formal you want to be. In the policy development, we were not heard. So to even have our name on there should not...
I get it.
It shouldn't even be on there.
I get it.
Because
we showed up at the meetings.
I get
we were given a handout, and that's what the policy
and,
was.
And we'll touch on that and some of the input, like I said, in later presentations. This is just meant to be that during policy development, we formed an ad hoc group, and there were commercial and recreational stakeholders on that group.
Okay.
That's the statement.
Just so it's not that we were in the part of the we were part of the development.
I would definitely never say that you guys agreed completely or you voted unanimously to support this policy. All that's meant to be is just that we reached out and sought input from you guys. Okay, from all groups.
I don't even think that happened.
No,
you were members of the ad hoc group.
That's it.
The statement.
So if you handed
a policy, and that's
I get that. I get that. But
when you put a policy developer, I get it.
You were members of the group. That's all I'm trying to say. That's all I'm trying to say. We can't if we're going to get wrapped up on every little word.
No, but that's the. I think it's a big one. I think it's bigger than you think it is. How about
no,
that?
No, I completely understand.
Because it says development, if it said policy group, or it just said ad hoc advisory group, but when it says development on there, that sounds like we had say in it.
Okay. Note taken. Okay. Like I said, we'll walk in the presentation that I give in December, that will be focused on some of the comment that we received both from the advisory groups and from the public that we provided in your book. So,
okay.
I have the, you guys have the document in here that details the commercial thoughts on policy.
Okay.
So that will be provided. We'll discuss that in later meetings. Just that, like I said, all this is meant to be is that in this ad hoc group, there were commercial and recreational stakeholders on that group. No, and I get it. You guys don't want to attach your name to that you approved of this.
Right? Not approved.
I understand.
I just don't want to say
that
we were part
feel
of the,
like you're
we were not part of the development.
I understand.
Okay.
So just walk through some of the meetings that we had, just a quick list of what they were done. Policy was adopted in 2015. The policy is set to expire in 2023. Move on, Barb. The objectives of the policy, these are pulled straight from it. Achieve restoration of wild salmon, avoid ESA designation, maintain and enhance the economic well-being of both recreational and commercial fisheries, appropriate distribution of fishery opportunities, enhance transparency, information sharing, and improve technical rigor, and all this was that bullet in front was targeted at restoring and maintaining public trust and support for salmon management in Willapa Bay.
I have a question on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
On ESA designation, but you catch a fish at the bar, you can't tell where that goes in Willapa Bay. How can we have an ESA designation until there's absolutely no fish coming back anywhere in Willapa Bay?
Well, ESA designation, so there's a couple different ones like threatened, extinct. If you fail to reach your goals year after year after year, management objectives, you could face some sort of ESA designation. Now, one of the things that's I think people confuse is that it would never be any sort of designation for Willapa Bay Chinook. Willapa Bay Chinook is part of the coastal ESU, which is the evolutionary significant unit. It would be, and that is a South Coast Fall Chinook ESU. So Willapa Bay is just a part of that. So, anyways. So, long story short here, Jack, you don't have to fish them down to zero before you're at risk here.
I understand that,
yeah.
But I can't see how you can have a problem when they're all alike. They're all the same. Until we get down to we can't meet hatchery escapement or your wild escapement, then I don't see how you can have it.
Yeah, and that's
you can have an ESA
that was my
problem
comment too.
With
so that's
they're all the same fish.
That's the risk. But the management objectives and some of the metrics that we send off to the feds and they're looking at it, the PFMC process and all that stuff, is natural origin Chinook. And that's what would drive that ESA listing if it was to come to be. And keep in mind, a lot of people put a lot of stock in that genetics information. It's a one-time snapshot of what we have right now. That doesn't mean that over time, if we adhere to conservation principles, that those hatchery and wild stocks would start to separate over time. That's a possibility.
Their DNA is not going to change.
Unless
you bring fish.
No, it will. No, that's not true.
It will, right, but in what time frame? We're not going to do it in 16 years.
Well, I mean, we could debate that all night long.
Right.
I can't sit here and say it will happen by here or here or
no,
here.
No, but theoretically,
it just depends.
Going by history and what other people have said, it's a long process.
Yeah, usually 4 or 5 generations before you start to see some sort of separation. I mean, that's typical, but, you know.
So free policy
can happen over a few brood cycles.
And after the genetic thing, shouldn't we be getting rid of the word wild?
No, that's actually pulled right from the policy itself. That's the first
right,
paragraph.
But that was pre-policy.
So
now that we've learned a few things,
So here's the deal. Our objective, our task in front of us, my task, is to do a comprehensive review of the implementation and performance of the policy to date. We have, now, when that culminates in February, as I'll talk about here in a minute, we'll do a presentation and a final report to the commission on that. At that time, it'll go one of three ways. They will either decide to do nothing, they will come back and say, ask the department to either do and or additional analyses or ask for recommendations, or they will make changes. Our task right now is just, what is the policy, what was in the policy, what has happened, and present that to them. That's it. That's the comprehensive review.
Okay.
It's not to advocate for changes or any of that stuff. We just want to paint an accurate picture, data-driven, about what has happened.
Okay.
And that's the task. With that being said, all these commission meetings will have their public comment through us, through those commission meetings, through emails to the commission. Feel free, and we encourage you to do so, provide your thoughts to the commission about what you think. But this process that we're undertaking is going to be data-driven and just a review of what has happened in regards to what the policy wanted us to do. That's what we're doing. Okay, move on, Bert. So here's some guiding principles. These are not meant, they're not all of them. We walked through them in an earlier meeting. We went through each one and had some discussion about them. The reason I highlighted these are, for one reason or another, either we've had issues with, or there's been a lot of public comment around them, right? Improved broodstock management, HSRG standards. We've heard a lot of stuff. We've had some issues with this, specifically Willow River. We've also had some successes, right? We've improved some stuff at NACEL. Alternative selective gear in the commercial fishery. Now, there was some language in there about developing other stuff. We've taken a run at that, and really after 4 years, our results are as we've got tangle net at this time. That's what we've got. Adequately account for species impacts. You know, we've been working on that. That's been something we've been improving all the way through. So that's something I want to highlight. Obviously, there's been a lot of comments back and forth about our implementation of in-season management. Either too much, too little, you're not doing it at all, we're doing it way too much. So there's a lot of issues around that one. Transparent salmon management. You know, we've been doing. We feel like we put a lot of stuff out there, but you still hear, you know, you guys aren't sharing stuff. You know, so that's something that we wanted to highlight. And improve fishery management tools. So just increasing some of the technical rigor of the tools that we use for fishery management. So now getting into some of the species-specific guidance. For the Chinook guidance, it was meant to be a two-phase rebuilding program. Encompassing phase one was 2015 through 2018 fisheries years. And then the phase two was 2019 and beyond. For Chinook, we were tasked with achieving broodstock management standards by 2020. We've made some successes in that in some areas. In other areas, we haven't made any progress, but, you know, at least for Willow River, the reduction in hatchery program there was, by this date, should bring us in line with what those management standards are. The objective of all these conservation and management goals was to reach spawner goals in year 16 through 21. For Chinook guidance, we're right when we do fisheries planning, full recreational fishing season with increased participation and catch. For Chinook and Willow Bay, we made some policy decisions in terms of population designations that were different than the previous paradigm that was the 2010 draft salmon management plan where NACEL was primary. In this policy, we switched from NACEL primary to Willapa primary, with NACEL as contributing, and they wanted us to maintain that rebuilding trajectory, that over time, we need to see
increase in spawner abundance, natural origin spawner abundance. So, more specifically about phase one. In phase one, we had a 20% impact rate cap for Willapa River and Nacelle River Chinook stocks. There was also, in order to work on those and develop those alternative years, there were some set-asides that kind of increased over time. Obviously, we had commission guidance specific to the 2018 fishery that kind of eliminated that requirement for us, but I still want to highlight this as one of our successes. 2U, TangleNet and 2U has been a good thing, allowed us to have a little bit more opportunity there, and we've been pretty much fishing that in 2U all the way through the early coho management period. And then some of the gear allocation issues with no commercial fisheries until after Labor Day in the South End, no commercial fisheries prior to 9/16 in the North End. So for phase two, 14%. So that 20% is supposed to drop to 14% in 2019.
You need to bullet point on phase two.
Oh.
Red mark.
All my
sparkles.
My projector.
So coho guidance. For the coho guidance, achieve aggregate spawner goal for natural origin coho. We prioritize commercial fishing opportunities in the coho management period from September 16th through October 14th. The comment was made last night that coho management also extends into the November. You're correct. Provide recreational fishing opportunities after that. Moving on. Similarly, for chum, achieve the aggregate spawner goal for naturally spawning chum. We had a lot of conversation last night about naturally spawning versus natural origin spawners. Quite simply, we can't tell the difference between hatchery. We don't have the ability to tell the difference between hatchery and wild chum on the spawning grounds.
Okay, let's just back up here 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I mean, when you go there in 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks.
Next Friday,
whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just gonna. Is this the presentation you're giving?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're not gonna elaborate on anything.
No, it's just a 15-minute. It's just meant to give them a general overview of some of the tenets of the policy, and then seek their approval on the process. That's all it is. We got to get their approval. They asked us both in the policy and in the commission conference call from February 16th, where the commission guidance for the 2018 season, they asked us to do a comprehensive review of phase one. So. The first thing I got to do is propose to them a process that I'm going to use to review the policy and get their approval of that. Then I can move on with the rest of the
review. Then you pick it apart.
Then I pick it apart.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got
no, it. This is just meant to give them a general overview. Because commissioners have changed and all that
got
stuff,
it.
Just want to highlight some of the, give them a 10,000 foot level view of the policy.
When's the next commissioner going to get replaced? Is that... Like
I have
soon
no idea.
Nobody seems to know.
One of them has a 2018 end date.
No, the one just resigned.
Carpenter.
No, Keeney just resigned, and so his seat's open. So.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
I didn't
know until the other day. Anyway,
I hadn't even heard that. I was just in Olympia today, so I
just heard it too. So I was just curious.
Maybe there was a date.
If you go on the website under the commission, Fish and Wildlife, go to the commission. All of their dates are on there.
Well, he resigned, so.
No, I know, but if you wanted
to see
who, no, I know, but if no, you wanted to see what their end actually
right, no,
I was
just wondering if they had a replacement for me.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I didn't even know he resigned.
Yeah,
I
didn't know either.
Go ahead, Jack.
Is the 10% impact, is that permanent?
No, so there's a couple of different ways that gets kicked in. One is if you haven't made chum escapement 3 out of 5 years, and then there's another for 2 years in a row. So,
let's say we have a 70,000-80,000 run. We're not limited to 7,000 to 8,000 fish.
We are if we haven't made escapement consistently over the last few years, and that's been some of the problem, right? In I want to say 2017, 16,
we did not, or was 15, 16, we didn't make 17.
Yeah, something like that. One year we had an 80,000 chum run, but because of some of that language, we were still limited to a 10% impact rate.
Yeah, so 16 we had 80,000, and then 17 we had a 20,000.
So really, I mean, the intent there is to consistently meet those goals before we fish at a higher rate.
Yeah.
Right? And the policy's in your book, too, if you want to review that at some time, Jack. So, yeah, once again, achieve spawner goal, provide commercial fishing opportunities, then provide recreational fishing opportunities, and because of the lack of being able to consistently meet escapement, we've been into this 10% terminal impact rate cap. Also, it has prohibited us from enacting fisheries in the chum management window from October 15th to October 31st. So that's also a part of that. So in terms of the policy review process, this is just kind of an overview of what we're going to do. We're going to develop the review questions, look at those key metrics, once again, data-driven, around the implementation and performance to date of phase one. We're going to do that get some feedback, hopefully, from the Fish and Wildlife Commission on some things that questions they would specifically like to see in the review. Technical staff, Barb and Lyle, are going to develop some of those key biological metrics that we're going to use to evaluate. For instance, harvest rates, spawner goals, escapements, just, you know, your standard stuff. And then we'll work with the Willow Bay Salmon Advisory Group to develop some metrics as well. So that's part of what we're doing tonight. Go back one more, Barb. So we're scheduling workshops to go over relevant data, to answer those review questions. All of this will culminate in a February presentation to the commission, where we'll do a presentation that'll be analysis of data and results, and we'll also have a final written report that we will seek their approval of at that time. So, and here's the table just kind of outlining when we're planning on doing all this. Actually this process started with a public workshop that we conducted in January down in Raymond with all the flip charts around the room. We've had a advisory group meeting on September 4th. At that meeting, we talked about the proposed process. We reviewed some of the public feedback. That is the 9/14 meeting materials that are in your book. We gave you guys every comment that we've heard to date around this that's been sent in, both from the public workshop. And then in some successive meetings with commercial fishers, they provided some additional feedback. And then we had a homework assignment from the orientation meeting for folks to send in some of their initial thoughts. So all that's been compiled and put in your books under that tab for the 9/14 meeting. This is where we're at tonight. We're just looking at some, we're going to develop some of those review questions and look at some of the reviews that we've given so far to date to the commission around the policy. And here in red is where we will be when I give this presentation. So we'll propose the process, we'll take some commissioner feedback and seek approval of the process. Then moving forward, we've got some Saturday workshops scheduled, one in November, one in December, to review all the relevant data. I will go back in front of the commission in December and update them on the progress that we've got to date. We'll have some meetings in January with the advisory group to go over drafts of that final report and take some feedback on that. I'll go back to the commission again in January, update them on where we were, and this will all culminate in this February presentation. And that's it. So that's all I'm doing next Friday. So, any questions? Okay,
no.
Good. All right, so what we're gonna do next is, we've provided you guys with all the review presentation, the annual reviews that I've given to the commission. So I wanna start with the 15 one and just kind of walk through that. So these are the metrics that we've used to present to the commission to review the implementation and performance in each given year.
Okay, so our task tonight is we'll go through that, and you guys provide us some feedback on what we should, what have we missed? What do you think the commission should see in terms of data or other things that we aren't providing? We took some comments on that last night, and those are on the flip chart, so we'll walk through those in just a second. Keep in mind, as I mentioned earlier, our task is to do a comprehensive review of the policy performance and implementation to date, right? If you guys have thoughts on where it should go from there, feel free to email those in. We'll make sure it gets included for the record. Feel free to, you know, come to those commission meetings and provide testimony during the public comment section. But our task is just to look at the performance and review. So a few of the things before we get into this, we'll walk through this really quick. So we started here, I believe. Is that right, Lyle?
Yeah,
the first one, and that's
here.
The second one?
Yeah.
Okay. So as we walk through this, we'll talk a little bit about when we give this presentation in February, a lot of these numbers are preliminary. Some of them are much more final than others. But one thing that was brought up is in, like, when we did the 2015 review in February of 16, we didn't go back, when we went back in 17, we didn't give them a final run reconstruction because there were some changes from 15 to when what we presented to the commission preliminarily to the final run reconstruction. So one of the comments was, make sure when you go back in a successive year, update if there were any changes from that initial presentation. Make sure you update that in next year's presentation. Give them a kind of final, you know, this is where we ended up. Also, one of the comments was, assist the Fish and Wildlife Commission understanding the budget request, addressing holes in data and providing solutions. So some of the policy directs us to do some things, right? And not all of those things have we been able to do. The comment really was provide the commission with where there are holes in our data, what things we would like to know that we just aren't able to do in order to help us acquire funding in order to get those things done that are mandated in the policy, right? There was some talk about simplifying and consolidating the charts to make it a more concise method, message. So one of the things that was talked about, and you'll see it when we walk through, we talk about commercial harvest and then recreational harvest second. We use a lot of tables. People were saying this would be better if it was a visual, a graph, rather than just a table of numbers, so you can kind of put some of those pieces together. Another comment was, show recreational harvest and then show commercial harvest on the same graph so people can see what has happened, what the differences have been, you know, how things have changed prior to the policy to what's happened now, and make sure and show what the prediction was and where we actually ended up. Okay, all good stuff. Better answer for upward trajectory of returns or lack thereof. People want us to have a better explanation as to why that's the numbers of natural origin spawners aren't just bouncing right up. We made some changes. We've restricted some fisheries. We've dropped harvest rates down from what they were previous to 2015, down to, you know, 20% or so. And so why changes haven't occurred?
Does it also address that you've opened other areas?
We'll
saying you want to know why
hold that. We'll get to that point.
Okay.
We'll have a lot of
sure it was discussed last night. Maybe it wasn't.
No, it wasn't actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No. This is a full complete list. Huh? Inform the Fish and Wildlife Commission that we were going to be here regardless. It takes 3 to 5 years for decisions, actions to be assessed. Show visual describing this. So, kind of a counterpoint to the upward trajectory. Changes that we made in 2015, we're really not going to see benefits or subtractions to until 2019. We've got to deal with a life cycle of a fish, right? So
enacted certain management objectives, and it's going to take a brood cycle before we start to see either the benefits or non-benefits.
Right, but with your reduced, you should have seen some with your reduced harvest rate.
No, theoretically, yeah, no, fair point. Address the genetic profile of Willapa Bay stocks. So there's a lot of stuff out there about what that means, what the genetics data actually tells us, and you know there's a lot of things working there. So want a good explanation of the genetic profile. Aspects in the policy that have yet to be accomplished. Address holes in data, kind of ties back to this other one. The five bullets in adaptive management of the policy. So there are five bullets in the back of the adaptive management policy that direct us to do some certain things. Four of those things we've completed. The one we haven't is number three, which is a review of the spawner goals. It has Chinook by 2020, Coho and Chum were directed to be done in 2016. We have not done that. We haven't got the funding necessary in order to complete that review. So every 10 years, reevaluate the spawner goals to capture habitat restoration. So as habitat, some of these conservation groups, habitat restoration groups are working on projects to improve either juvenile rearing or spawning habitat or open up previously disconnected spawning habitats, we should take a look at that, and our spawner goals should be reflective of that over time. So show scientific data of benefits of naturalizing stocks, better adaptation, more resilient to a variety of changes. So as we implement better hatchery broodstock management practices, you should see productivity of the natural fish start to increase, and they become more adapted to reproductive success in the Willapa drainage over time as those natural selective pressures do their job, right? Even though some may say that these fish are heavily impacted from hatchery genetics, right? They're mostly in. These are all hatchery fish. Even so, if you allow some of those hatchery fish to spawn in the right proportions to each other, over time, nature will do its work, and those fish will become better and better adapted to their environment over each brood cycle. Over each generation, they'll get better. So that show that.
Doesn't that only work if your trajectory is going up?
No. That's a piece of the trajectory going up.
Right, and if you're spawning, I mean, you're assuming you know your spawner goal.
We've got a spawner goal that was done a long time ago.
Right.
We had a lot of conversation about this last night.
So I'm just saying, so maybe, you know, I think
it could be our 4353 is way off base.
Well, maybe it's 7,000. Maybe it's 2,000.
That was the exact comment we talked about last night. We don't know. We have what we have, and that's what we have to manage to for now.
Right.
But we need to keep putting the pressure on that we need this evaluation done to make sure that we're doing the right things. Right.
You might be doing the right thing, and you might go from 2,000 to 2,500, and you might think you're failing.
Exactly.
On the 4,350.
Right. Right. That's the exact point. Yep. No, that's the exact point. And highlight the events that are prohibiting hatchery egg take. So obviously 2015 we had some issues. This year we've had some issues with low water and flows, higher stream temps than normal, and early returning fish, and we've experienced some die-offs some systems seem better suited to deal with this than others, right? Nacelle at NEMA, we've seen high die-offs there. We haven't quite seen the same level of mortality in the Willapa system, probably most likely due to the quantity and quality of staging area in the Willapa drainage, right? Willapa drainage has got a lot more space and better pools. It's a little cooler than the other systems, which make Chinook a little more resilient to some of these issues that we've had at Nacelle and NEMA, right? So
maybe you know, Is that why the Willow Plow was chosen as the primary? Even though it's got probably the best hatchery of the three.
It's part of went into it.
Is it got
yeah.
the best
yeah.
substrate for spawning too? Or is that?
No.
Nobody knows.
In terms of the best substrate for spawning, we haven't really done a qualitative assessment of the amount of spawning habitat. I mean, we could make some preliminary estimates. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Lyle?
As far as habitat and
spawning habitat.
I think Willowpaw's got some fantastic spawning habitat.
Would you say it's better than anything else in the drainage?
Historically or currently?
We're not holding it. Obviously,
right.
we don't have
I mean, right.
Your child's not hanging in the balance.
Yeah. I would say I like that the Willowpaw, I agree that the Willowpaw does have more holding area. When you talk about pools and whatnot, the Willowpaw does have more pools, especially in proximity to where those fish are holding close to the hatchery. There's also a lot, the hatchery's higher, so they fish are going to access more of that watershed than in the Nacelle where they're, 4 or 5 miles out of tidewater, and then
right.
in the Nemo where they're a couple of miles out of tidewater.
Right.
So I think there is better holding water in the Willowpaw. To say that the substrate or to say that the spawning gravel is better than one system to another, having seen some of the upper reaches of it, the reason I ask is the Willowpaw is much more diked and levied and armored, and it's constrained within that channel. So the bottom end of it has potential and could, but it's so scoured out in the bottom, we don't have as much gravel in there as
right.
they would other places. While you get above the Weir and the Nacelle, great gravel. You get above the Weir and the Nema, great gravel. But the Nema is a short system, doesn't have a lot of gravel really available. It's not a very big stream. The Nacelle is
right.
obviously bigger. So it's kind of a, I guess there's really no clear answer for me on that one. But
no,
but that's all the stuff that I'm thinking about when you ask me that question.
Right. No, I was wondering before the policy. Yeah, I mean, this has nothing to do with anything now. But did they know that the Willowpaw was probably the best hatchery for producing Chinook? Was that ever?
That was definitely so. When that policy decision was made, there's really no clear cut answer here. There's advantages and disadvantages to each system, right?
Well, I'm just talking straight hatchery production.
Straight hatchery production, I would say the Willowpaw probably is the best due to its resiliency given the environmental conditions
right.
that we've experienced. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the case, and that's why we haven't seen those mortality events. I wouldn't discount the amount of cooler water and the seepage. I guess I would say groundwater that seeps in that's probably cooler that helps keep that river temperature a little colder. We know that South Fork Willapa River has the coldest water of anywhere in the bay. Just the way it flows out from that spring up in those hills and whatever, there's a good source there.
It's the water off the golf course.
Absolutely.
It's in the water.
But the disadvantage to Willapa is the location of the hatchery, right? It's not on the system, and it's not on the main stem, and there's no way for us to make fish recruit back, right? At Nacelle, we've got a nice weir. At Nema, we've got a nice weir. The fish have nowhere else to go. They hit there, and we can sort and do what we need to do. So, but with that being said, it doesn't quite have some of the, the river temperatures are higher.
Right.
So there's disadvantages and advantages to all these. Really what I think needs to be sorted out is what's most important to us, right?
Right.
That was done in the policy, and the decision was made to make Willapa the primary stock. That's how we'll go about evaluating it. Once again, if you guys have thoughts, something different, provide them to us. We'll get them on the record. Provide them to the commission for their consideration. Ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, this is going to go one of three ways, right? They're going to do nothing. They're going to ask for additional analyses and recommendations, or they're going to make a change. And we'll go from there. We'll go from there. But right now, I mean, we just want to make sure that they have the information necessary to make those decisions.
Right.
So, and then the last bullet here was, even though one of those five bullets in the adaptive management section was for me to do a hatchery review presentation, I completed that and did that to the commission. People would like me to do that again and shine some light on needed hatchery infrastructure improvements, that sort of stuff. Things that we're working with that just really aren't up to par. So, those are some of the things we heard last night. Now, we'll walk through this presentation. And the reason I'm doing this one, all my review presentations that I've given are in this same format. So just, by reviewing one, we basically review them all. I was going to say, we don't need to go through all four, do we? No, absolutely not.
All right.
So, but I just wanted you to have all of them, because right, if I didn't provide them, then I'd get scared about it.
Let's go.
Yep. So we'll go through this. These are the metrics that we have used to date. Your guys' job is to add to that list. What are we not showing the commission that we should be showing? Keep in mind, not advocating for one fishery or another. I'm not advocating for changes in the policy. It's just about the implementation and performance. How has it performed given its intent? Go through this. Blast through that. Go through all the key policy elements. I don't need any of this stuff. We've already touched on that. So, first, when I get to the first part of the review, this is just meant to be some bullet points about what we saw in the year. So, 2015, wanted to highlight that we were still using CRC estimates and they weren't available at the time of this presentation. The recreational fishery in 2015 was extremely productive. It was difficult for us to assess the impacts because we didn't have an active monitoring program, and we highlighted that we had a need for additional recreational monitoring, especially in the marine area, to be able to account for those impacts. In terms of the commercial fishery, as we went through the season for this specific year, we had a little bit higher catch rate than what was expected as we moved through the year. This could have been due to a forecasting buildup issues or drought. We know now that the forecast was low for 2015. We had much more Chinook than what we forecasted going into that season. So that explains why this was higher, right? Our forecast was off. So another important part of 2015 was there was a total collapse of the coho fishery. It led to closures for the commercial fishery and the rec fishery. We pretty much ended the commercial fishery sometime there in September. I don't remember the exact day, but we had planned to fish 27 days, and we only fished 10 days. So overall, we had 47 openers planned in 2015. We only ended up fishing 10 of those due to that coho collapse. And another thing we'll get to in a second. So the recreational fishery was also closed once we got to once we were assured of hatchery broodstock management goals. We did reopen some limited recreational fisheries that were just below the hatcheries, and they were marked selective, so we had a release natural origin coho requirement. Next slide. Go ahead.
The collapse of our fishery wasn't solely due to coho.
No, it was this too. It was this early
on. And so, going on this year, I think we've improved with your in-season management.
Thank you.
Other than we've only used it to take days away.
I get that.
But that would have been a great example of, had we fished earlier on Chinook, we wouldn't have had a collapse in the commercial fishery.
Okay.
And that's where, now that we're pretty much removed from the Chinook, which, you know, that's why our fishery has failed since the policy.
Okay. Go ahead and move on, Bart. So for the chum arrived earlier than normal. This presented a problem for us because we couldn't find a way to access those hatchery coho without impacting chum at a higher rate than the 10%. I.e., this is a mixed stock fishery. They were right on top of each other. We had some hatchery coho that we were trying to access, and we couldn't get to them due to our limitations of chum. So, and then that was the drought year, 2015. We had some Chinook pre-spawn mortality that took place in the nacelle and NEMA systems, and we've kind of beat that drum already. So, in terms of the actual metrics, biological metrics that we use to review, Willapa Bay Fall Chinook, this is just the natural population. We provide the objectives for the year in terms of our management and conservation objectives, number of spawners, what the harvest rate was, and the alternative gear set aside. What did we plan for?
And at the end, what did we do? Keep in mind, once again, just like I said earlier, these numbers are preliminary. When we get to February, we can give you the first look, and some of these numbers are better than others, and we'll show you here in a second. This 2043, this didn't change. That number stayed the same after we went through everything in QAQC. This number changed, and we could talk about the reason why, and that changed these numbers later on. When we went in front of them in February, we looked like we'd made the 20%. Now we know we did not. The reason for that was the recreational monitoring piece, the recreational fishery. When we go into the modeling, Andy, you're fully aware, we use a historical average to put a placeholder around recreational fisheries until we get that CRC data. That process failed miserably for 2015. The recreational fishery was two or three times what we had planned for. So those, once you tallied up those impacts, it took us over the 20% in that year.
Did that take into account the non-local fish?
The out-of-basin fish?
Absolutely, yeah. No, we were using, so we've been using the genetic profile, locals versus non-locals. We did that analysis in 2014. 2015 is the first year we started applying that. So we subtracted out the estimated number of non-locals based on what we were collecting from you guys on board.
So based on this year, do you think your number is still close?
What do you mean?
The outer basin fish?
Absolutely.
You do?
I think
you don't think it's higher than what you have on there?
It depends. In any given, what we've seen is that it can shift in any given year. It's not something... It's not something that you can count on and has been static year to year. One year we get 72% of the fish in the commercial fishery in terms of unmarked are local. The next year it was 58, 65. You know, that number fluctuates each year.
But my point is, in the commercial fishery, you're taking from the entire bay. In the sport fishery, it's predominantly
from
your control zone.
No, that's okay. That's a fair statement. We did some stuff to try and rectify that for 2018.
It's
right?
Difficult, right? And yeah. What you saw.
We don't know yet because we haven't analyzed those samples. So we'll have those samples back.
No, but my point is, their fishery wasn't very good this year.
Yeah.
Had the control zone been open, would it have been better?
I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
I can theorize that it might have been.
Would it have been great?
Might have been higher.
Would it have been great? No, because there were no Columbia River fish. But it would have been better.
Yeah.
But my point is, you're using the numbers from the commercial fishery, and when those numbers were taken, that was bay-wide fish. So you're taking numbers from, when we were fishing up in Bruceport.
No, that's not how we do it. So what we do is we look individually at each area, and we don't aggregate across the bay as a whole for non-locals. So there's a different rate of non-local encounters in 2T than there are in 2U, in 2N, in 2M. Each one has its own standard.
You've always done that, that way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. And for the recreational fishery, we just use 2T data. We don't use anything else.
Where else do
you? Because that's where they're
you don't have any data from anywhere else.
Well, we have 2U data, 2M data, 2N data, but we just don't utilize it for the rec fishery because that's not where they're fishing.
That's why I'm saying you don't have a fish there. Did you ever catch fish this year?
Mm-hmm.
You did?
Not many.
How about, I said eight fish. How about two fish?
There's a hand. Person here.
He doesn't want to.
Am I prying now?
Let's not get drunk down with the actual numbers.
That's not what we do.
I see you a bunch of cards.
So, in terms of the hatchery, for Chinook, really the metrics we use is, what was the run size predicted? What was the escapement predicted? What was the harvest rate predicted? And what were they actually? So when I talk about people want some visuals, they would rather see this in a graphic form, maybe a bar graph or something, than just numbers on a slide. They feel like that would be more impactful. I think that's a good comment. So that's one we received last night as we walked through some of these kind of tables. I remember I'm a science guy, so...
Like
a bunch of numbers like that, man.
How are we going to use the sprinkles? Hey, you can make a star graph.
There we go. So what we were looking at for coho naturals, and remember, you got to relate this back to some of the species-specific guidance. So species-specific guidance is achieve natural origin escapement. So that's what we're looking at, right? There's our preseason prediction. This is the objective for spawners. Keep in mind, in 2015, we were still working on 1390. 13.6 didn't get implemented until 2016. So what did we predict preseason? What was the actual? So what we talked about a little bit last night, and what I mean when I say some of these numbers are better than others, for coho, this is probably where we have the most uncertainty when we're presenting numbers in February, simply because we're still counting coho as I'm doing this presentation, right? So it's really hard for us to have a good stock assessment look, an escapement value, when we're doing this. So we've developed a tool, an in-season spawn escapement estimator based on historical trend data that we utilize to give us this kind of first look. In this year, it told us that we were low, although we still thought we were going to make it. It turned out when we counted all the beans and did all the QAQC that this number was really 10,000 and some change. So we ended up not making it in the long run, even though in February we talked about we thought we were going to. So similarly, same thing for hatchery coho. We're still counting coho, so there's some uncertainty there when we're trying to do this this quickly. For chum, once again, the objective, aggregate naturally spawning chum. So we talked about what the objective is, 13.4, what our harvest rate objective was. 35.4, thank you, Luck. And then what we planned for preseason, and then what the actuals were. And then, so this is where the comment came in that we show commercial catch, and then we show recreational catch. And we just show it in a one-year snapshot. We don't provide any historical context about what it was and what it is now for both fisheries, and people didn't like that we separated that. That we should show that catch and that effect of the policy to both fisheries on the same visual. That would give the commission a little more insight into how the policy is performed and what it's actually done, right? So this is what we planned for preseason in terms of catch. You can see the model didn't perform too badly in terms of Chinook and chum, but coho was terrible. And that's probably reflective of the only fish in 10 days. So here we look at just the spawner escapements for each of the stocks. For Chinook, we break it up, even though we're really looking at the 43-53 number. We break it up into each basin, provide them a percentage of the goal, and coho and chum in the aggregate. Once, as I've already mentioned, this was done using the in-season update model for coho. That's a pretty solid, by this time for chum, this is a solid number. Chum's pretty much wrapped up and we can get a real good number by February, so that's not a problem. So, as I mentioned in the comments that we received last night, one of those was that people would like to see this. They think it would be better if we presented this as a graph and showing. One of the things I talked about last night is that we really don't want to look any farther back than 2010 because we didn't have mass marking prior to 2010. So any natural origin numbers are not really accurate. There's a lot of imprecision in those estimates. Now we have mass marking, so we have a greater ability to separate out Haas and Noss, hatchery origin spawners and natural origin spawners, and they'd like to see that trend over time.
So with that, when was this natural spawner thing made?
Last night. The comment came in last night.
The spawner goal. Natural spawner goal. When was that made?
Oh, that it was, yeah. Early
before
70s,
that, before mass marking.
Yeah, way before.
Right.
Way before.
No, I think that should be put on there.
Okay. We talked a little bit about, since we had that die-off event, we wanted to make sure we highlighted to the commission that, you know, show them some actual numbers of what that looked like. We had real high mortality in the nacelle system. We had elevated mortality, although not quite nearly as severe, in the NEMA system. And really, these numbers are just slightly elevated for the Willapa system. That's pretty normal in terms of pre-spawn mortality, given the run size that we had for that year. We also wanted to show a little bit about surpluses. We heard a lot about there's a lot of surplus. When we conducted the AHA model analysis that went into policy development, we were fully aware that we were going to see some heavy surpluses, especially to Chinook, but also for coho, moving forward because of that reduction in harvest rate, i.e. our ability to access those hatchery stocks were limited by the impact rate caps, right? If we didn't fish at 20%, if we fished at 30%, we might have eaten up a lot more of those. So this is just meant to kind of represent that. And went through some data about what we did in terms of recreational monitoring for 2015. Keep in mind, it was our first year of doing it. We only sampled a few days, only sampled a few anglers, but we wanted to provide them the information that we got from that. In the first year, really, this was just a feasibility. Can we do this? And the objectives of that, the questions we had was, one, can we get an unmarked encounter ratio out of that in order to account for natural origin impacts in that non-retention fishery? And two, to increase our CWT collection. Okay? So we did that two different ways. We had a creel sampling, and we also had a VTR, voluntary trip reporting program, that we utilized to take a look at that. Now we know that this was effective. It did work. And in 2018, we've gone to a full-blown active recreational monitoring with catch estimation, and it's the full kit and caboodle. So that should provide us in successive years with some really great information in order to be more adaptive with our in-season management and be able to weather those discrepancies in forecasting versus actual run size. We also hope to be able in the future take a look at some in-season update models where we may be able to get update that forecast based on what we're seeing there. Now, caveat to that is a lot of times that's not something that's very successful, relating the either success or failure of recreational fisheries to the actual run size. Hasn't worked in a lot of places, but doesn't mean we're not going to try and take a look at it and see if we can develop some correlations there. So, just some data on what was actually kept and released and all that stuff from our fishery. We showed them some public feedback that we've received to date on the first year of the plan. This slide is specific to the commercial fishery, right? This slide is specific to the recreational fishery, and then last one. And then I kind of, and this really isn't important for this exercise, but I talked them through kind of what we were looking at for planning fisheries for the next successive year. So, kind of put a bow on some of that stuff. Those are the metrics that we were showing the commission in terms of the what we felt was important to the performance and implementation of the policy. We took feedback last night on some things that people thought we could improve upon in terms of providing that information to the commission. So now I'll turn it over to you folks. Lia will capture your thoughts on the board there. So if you have anything additional to add that you think that we should be talking about in relation to implementation and performance, right?
If you're just going to go overview of the policy, there's really nothing.
Well, I mean, this is meant, so what we're doing tonight is developing some of those things that people want us to include in that final report. What else do they need to see in the final report and presentation in February that we haven't added, that isn't inclusive in this presentation or been brought up on that? What else should they see from a performance standpoint, right? This isn't the
they
part where
see
we
see that the commercial fishery has failed. it's in a
nutshell. No, I get it. But how do I represent that? Do I represent that in catch, X vessel value? How do you think, you know, what metric should I use to show that to the commission?
Catch would be a great way.
Okay.
You can show that it slightly improved this year, but not really. Not really. You know what you can do? You can take a snapshot of this meeting right here. I'm serious. Or even last night. Did you really think you're only going to have two people here tonight when you planned this meeting?
I did after yesterday's meeting.
I said when you planned the meeting.
No.
I'm serious. This is.
Yeah, no, I get it.
This is what they should be told. And I was surprised last night.
Yeah, me too.
When Master Bob called, the gentleman called first and said, nobody showed up.
Yeah.
So I think that's what you should be telling the commission. The public has lost all interest due to the policy. It's killed the commercial fishery first, and now next year it's going to be recreational fisheries in the toilet.
I think you have to tell them what the outlook for next year is with the hatchery plants so small out of the Willapa. Sport fishery is going to be non-existent. They're going to be like us.
Both fisheries are going to be non-existent in the North Bay until you go to coho management.
Okay, so I think to summarize that, it's that
are we really even going to have enough encounters to have our coho fishery in the North Bay?
That'll be hard to say until we start working on the forecasts. And by that, I understand that hatchery production has been reduced, so we're expecting not a whole lot of fish left back.
Reduced.
But I get it. We went from 7. So from 15 to 18, we were working off a baywide production of 7.15, somewhere in that neighborhood. Right. In 19... we'll see returns off 4.65, is that what it was?
Yeah.
4.65. And then in 2020, we'll start to have that increased nacelle production, and it'll go back up to 6-something. But next year looks pretty skinny. You're right. With that being said, some of the marine survival, and we'll know once we start seeing some of those metrics, could be increased because ocean conditions have been improving for this brood cycle. What we've been dealing with is a lot of the fish that went out, and they were out at the ocean when the blob was here. And now, 19 will give us that first look of fish that went out after the blob started breaking up. Now, does that mean it's going to be off the charts? I don't know. But I would expect that marine survival to improve over what it's been the last few years. So that might give us a few more fish, but you're absolutely right. We're working off a lower number,
that's
they should know that as we move forward.
But even if even if you had the best,
I guess just you know, maybe a graph or a chart of the reduction in hatchery production.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
Because
does that summarize what?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just the north side of the bay. The south side of the bay is going to be fine. They should know the north side of the bay. You're not going to have it. You can't have a fishery, because you're supposed to be targeting hatchery fish.
Yeah.
You don't have any.
And the mark rate in that fishery is going to change because of the reduction.
So basically, you're having a fishery. Your encounters are going to be the same on your natural fish, because you're still going to have the same.
You might even actually, because those abundances have shifted, you might increase the number of encounters of wild fish trying to go after those hatchery fish, because there'll be less hatchery fish, right?
Yeah, no, I get
see
that.
What I'm saying?
I get that. But I'm just saying, they should see there's nothing for them to encounter, so how are we even going to have a fishery there?
Okay.
There's nothing to encounter, so we can't. Like I said, both commercial and recreation, how can we put a fishery there when there's nothing to fish on?
Yeah.
And even though your natural encounter rate said the same or higher, but now we're just having a hook and release on the fish we're trying to protect.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the commercial hump tulips fishery.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I mean by, let me show you what I mean by that mark rate, right?
No, I
I'll just do a simple, this bar represents all the Chinook encounters, right? And at the proportional abundance that they are to each other right now, Barb and I were just working on this yesterday. What did it end up being? About 87% of the total Chinook in the bay, once they crossed the bar, wasn't it 87-something? Mark Rate, remember the document we had to provide to Aaron yesterday?
Oh, yeah.
It was about 87%.
Yeah.
So for 15 89. Through 18, yeah. we just worked on this. So 87% of all the Chinook that were crossing the bar were hatchery fish.
Right.
Which means only 13% were wild fish.
Right.
Right? So now I draw the same bar for 2019, right? We've reduced hatchery production by almost, I think it's about 42% when you go from 7.15 to 4.65, something like that. So now that line's going to be somewhere in here.
Yeah, but your bar has to be reduced too. Because
this is meant to represent total encounters.
100%.
Not
the number of fish.
Yeah, just this represents right. all the Chinook that are entering.
Right.
Now these are the hatchery fish and these are the wild fish. Right. So you can see, trying to go after these, you might encounter more of these because proportionally they're in different abundance.
But my point also is, a lot of the fish, they're encountering more Willapa fish than they are Nema and Nacelle in the marine waters.
So, okay.
So, it's the Willapa that took the hit on the hatchery production. So now your number's really coming down.
Yeah, so
to the point where it's almost going to be, what was the naturals on?
It's in your book there. We've got the. I don't know. At one point we have the escapements in here.
You need to take your.
Yeah.
Wild fish.
It was one of the data we provided.
What was that? There.
I mean, you need to take your hatchery fish.
Right.
And divide that up three ways to show.
Okay.
Willapa,
right.
Nacelle, or
we can talk about that. Yeah. No. So.
And the nacelle is the smaller portion.
Well,
now
right now,
is
going
to be the smallest portion of hatchery fish,
which is where your recreational fish
So the one issue with that is I don't have the data yet to show contribution rates from the specific hatcheries, and the reason for that is our CWT program that we were using prior to policy was a rotating panel. Basically, what that means is I didn't have tag groups coming out of each facility every year. We've made that change. Barb and I put together a new tagging program for Willapa that began with the 2016 brood year. So in 2020, we'll start to see returns proportional to their release from each hatchery. Then we will be able to do that. But I think it's fair to say that given the paradigm of the majority of the Chinook production happening in the north end, and now we've switched that to the south end, there is a lot of uncertainty around how each of those facilities' fish recruit to the marine area fishery. I think that's a fair statement. So talk about uncertainty in recruitment to fishery of hatchery Chinook due to hatchery production shifts. Is that a fair bullet point?
Okay.
Say that one more time and we'll start.
The uncertainty around recruitment of hatchery Chinook.
Okay, second.
To marine fisheries, given hatchery production shifts. You're typing. He's got to write.
That's what I said. That's easier.
That's why you gave him that one?
Yeah,
that's why I don't like doing that. Okay. Anything else? And don't think you guys are on the spot. You can think about this. If you have other comments that come to you, send them in to us. We'll make sure they get included in the record. We'll start going over the data to look at some of these things. Will be that November 17th Saturday. Then we'll sit down and what I'm planning for that meeting is Barb's going to spend some time and talk about the recreational monitoring program. We'll let you guys do some QA. We'll do some Q&A around that, you know. Lyle will talk about the stock assessment program, and then Barb will talk about the commercial monitoring program. Randy Aho, my hatchery complex manager, will be talking
we'll come in and talk about hatchery stuff for a while, and then we'll really start diving into the data to look at, okay, what is this actually done, right? How is this performed?
Maybe this is not for this next meeting or whatever, but I think you should also point out we've been given a priority on a fish that we can't fish. So I don't know if that's for this meeting.
And so I'm going to use your own words here to summarize. Boom or bust nature of directed commercial coho fisheries.
No, the chum.
Chum?
We got a window with it. We can't fish them.
Okay.
We can't have a directed fishery on chum.
Yeah.
Which is us priority on a fish. We have no directed fishery.
Okay. Priority to chum, directed chum fisheries to the commercial sector, difficult with the impact rate caps.
There you go.
Is that?
Because if there's no fish this year, it has no bearing on this year. So if you got a big run this year, there's no reason to be at 10%.
Okay.
That was more of a social choice. Social choice by some commissioners.
A sub-bullet to that would be utilize in-season management to be adaptive in directing.
Right.
Chum commercial fisheries.
Is that tool used anywhere else in the world?
Is it used anywhere? What do you mean? I'm not sure.
Alaska, if the some other river, or anywhere, Oregon, other river. If you don't meet your escapement 1 year, but next year you got a boom run coming. Well, you can only harvest 10% or 5% or 20%.
There are some constraints in the PST document that. Let's say, for instance, in the new PST document, a scheduled fishery exceeded its expectation, and that put at risk the conservation objective, i.e. they didn't make escapement, and they caught way more than they were supposed to on a specific stock.
Right.
Now, that fishery the next year has to pay that back regardless of the right
size. I saw that on there. How do you pay it back?
You take the
It was a 1-to-1. It was not 10%. If you over harvest it by 5,000, you are minus 5,000 next year.
Absolute, right off the top.
Right off the top.
Yep.
But that was meant for a bigger, larger run.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
What? Priority directed chum fisheries to commercial sector with rate caps limiting opportunity.
Right. Perfect.
Okay. The sub-bullet? We already moved on. What was the sub-bullet? Barb, did you capture the sub-bullet? We'll remember it. We'll catch it from the audio.
Right.
Michael, I'll listen to this again.
I wanted to know that it's on there that we didn't get past a fish. Things got murky after that. No, I think we're good.
Okay.
Just so we know what's going on.
No, and like I said, you know, if anything else comes to you, feel free to get that to us, and we'll talk about it again in November. So, like I said, we'll be presenting to the I'll be presenting to the commission in Vancouver. You guys are fully vetted on what we'll be talking about and what I will present. I realize, and one of the reasons I wanted to do that is because that meeting is Vancouver.
Right.
So wanted to make sure you guys had the information, and then it's up to you to decide whether you want to come down or not to provide any input on that. But there will be no changes. That's the presentation. It's already been submitted. It's already been printed. So there won't be any surprises. I've talked you through all my talking points, and like I said, we'll be seeking approval of the process at that point in time. We may receive some metrics that the commission wants us to specifically look at that, and then we'll walk through those on November 17th on that Saturday. We'll start the process. We'll do that over two meetings. One in November, one in December.
I was gonna say, last night someone asked where the meeting was in Vancouver, so I sent out a link to the agenda.
Yeah,
I didn't think so, but it's in her email.
Yeah. There might be some people who have interest in Columbia River who might go to that meeting, right? It's a joint commission, so it's actually, this one's kind of special because it's a 3-day commission meeting,
right?
And Thursday is joint with ODFW commission and Washington commission together.
Right.
Talking about Columbia River.
They're actually talking about it. They're not. There could be some movement on that.
There could be, yeah. Right. No, that'll be at their
discretion.
Because
didn't they cancel the last one?
No.
They were gonna vote on some stuff, and Washington wasn't ready.
They had a special meeting right here in Olympia a couple of weeks ago to go over all this, and I think this is the culmination of that.
Right.
Now Washington is ready to engage.
Right.
So it's a joint commission. So it'll be interesting. I won't be there on Thursday. I kind of wish I could be just to see how that goes.
Right.
But yeah, I'll be headed down on Friday to do my.
But you can listen.
I'm at 1:30. I'm at 1:30 on Friday. If you guys are interested.
I don't know. So okay.
That's what we got, guys. Thanks for coming.